Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
It is, we're here beneath a cloud of smoke now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just us and the forest fires.
This could be the first podcast with a mask on both of us.
It could be. It's possible. Daniel, I don't recommend...
Herbert. I don't recommend that you podcast with a mask on.
That's a little Bane there. Hello, Batman. This is Bane.
I like Bane. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Bane can...
Bane cast.
Bane of... we should... I'm going to say we're going to be tight and bright today, but that means this, people will look at their podcast player and be like, wow, they went for 2 hours. But probably not. Couple articles that you wrote to talk about. We should probably start with a review of a program that is on television. That would be Escape at Dannemora, a limited series on Showtime with lots of great names, right? Ben Stiller directed, Patricia Arquette, Benicio del Toro. But it sounds like you were pretty mixed on it.
Yeah, I think people should skip it. It's I finished it. It was overall very frustrating to me. It can't escape the confines of a prison break drama, and that is that it takes forever to get out. And oftentimes what's inside is not that super interesting. I think prison series have cliche characters. There's definitely one played by Benicio del Toro in this one. They're based on real characters. It's a real event. So there's a total oddball narrative to it because these are real life events. These did happen. They're real people. His character is a kind of like the prison kingpin. So that's that. We've seen that before. Paul Dano's character is much, much better. He is the center of the show. Patricia Arquette's character, which is the a person who works at the prison. She's married. She works at the prison. She ends up having an affair with two of the inmates. That's Paul Dano and Benicio del Toro's characters. And she's a piece of work in and of herself. The problem is it took five episodes to get out. And like I said, there wasn't enough in there to keep me. It is very, very loosely edited. It's directed by Ben Stiller. It's loosely edited, though. There's long patches of scenes, like 6-minute car drives that don't seem to have any sense or purpose. And that adds to the exhaustion level as you're watching it. And then when they do get out, they have a flash. Then they reveal this little trick that they use. They show you the flashback to who these people were and why they're in prison, which is my next problem with most prison series. You either have to have somebody who's in there who's falsely accused to be sympathetic, or what you're dealing is a story about a murderer. And no matter how much they've changed in prison, quote unquote, they still probably did awful things. And both of these people did awful things. And Patricia Arquette's character, even though she's not in prison, just works at one, is an awful character. And, you know, there's so much by the end of this that's very, very difficult to take. They're not likable people. And the drama actually takes a really long time to unfold, and Stiller kind of does a little too much of intricate detail, like how long it takes to get from the prison cell when they're digging out this little secret hole, from escaping at night to go dig some more and come back to the cell. He tracks them to and from, and by the third time they do that, I've said this before, by the third time they do that, you're like, okay, we get it. It's a really long way. Mm-hmm. Can we just like cut from him hammering in the wall to him being back in his bed? Or do we have to follow him to and fro again? So it's a lot of that. And it's just not in this times of confusion and how we talk about using our time wisely. It's not the best time spent.
Yeah, that's what struck me about your review is it's not like it's terrible. But like when I said you gave it a mixed review, you mm-hmm. immediately responded by saying people shouldn't watch it. And mm-hmm. that's really where we are right now, is almost this breakpoint where if it doesn't clear the bar entirely, then forget it. Unless you're somebody who loves one of these actors or you love this genre, our standards can be a lot higher than they used to be.
Yeah, it's just, I think time is precious, and this wastes it.
All right. Let's move on to a piece you wrote. You wrote a Critics Notebook piece that I think is worth talking about. We talked about it a little bit when you wrote your piece a couple years ago, post the election, about this, and you wanted to bring it up again. And, you know, you and I both have journalism backgrounds going a long way back. And this is, you know, an interesting premise. So what you wrote and wrote again this week is that Fox News is wildly successful in the ratings, and I think it would be hard to argue that it hasn't had an enormous impact on our country, on politics, and on the worldview of people in the Republican Party. Voters, not just the people who are the politicians, but the people who are the voters. And your argument is that one of the reasons that the left is has had some tough times since the rise of Fox News is that there is no Fox News for the left. That CNN and MSNBC both had opportunities, as well as somebody could create a new network and try to play the game that Fox News plays, which is basically they've got some news shows and then they've got lots and lots of opinion shows and they reinforce a very specific worldview. And that that MSNBC has put their toes in the water there, and as a result, their ratings are better than CNN's. But and then CNN refuses because they want to be straight down the middle. And your argument is, as it was 2 years ago, there is just it's right there for the taking if somebody would take it.
Yeah, there's a partisan divide that needs to be, I think, from a business model standpoint, taken advantage of, and it hasn't been. That's why I went back to it. But also because October ratings really clearly delineated the beatdown that CNN especially and then MSNBC are taking at the hands of Fox. It's 202 consecutive months. I think that's somewhere close to 16 years. So, I mean, if you can't figure it out now that your model's broke, you should. And, you know, unfortunately, I think a story like this is not great in our... You know, I make references to the TLDR world that we live in. It's too long, didn't read. I think that people are also not close readers, and that art has sort of been lost. I think this is a
anybody who writes things, and you and I both do, has absolutely had that experience where somebody writes you with a response, and they cared enough to write, and you realize they didn't actually like read what you wrote.
Yeah, they either didn't read it because people are responding just to the Twitter headline in some instances. People who did read it didn't read it closely enough.
Yep.
Or they also didn't comprehend it.
Yep.
Which is, I think, a little frustrating. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I could have made it more clear, though. I actually went back and reread it for the I don't know how many times today to say, like, did I not make this clear? The point that I was trying to make is that, you know, if your idea of journalism is TV news, then you're already in trouble.
Right.
You're living a soundbite life. So I make the point later on too that, like, if you're, you know, I prefer the New York Times, I prefer print. And that's not doesn't because I'm old school or that it's print has just been long so much better than network news and cable news. And I kind of timeline the evolution of it resources and how things led to where we are now, where it's just talking heads and stuff. So the point I make right at the first paragraph is like, hey, this is a totally different animal than print. I think people miss that point. The other thing is, I nowhere in there did I say be exactly like Fox News and tell lies and be the, you know, the de facto, you know, instrument of the Republican Party in a ministry of disinformation. That's what I'm saying. Which is frustrating. It's like, yes, I totally think, and I did 2 years ago, even prior to 2 years ago, I think it today, there's a golden opportunity for MSNBC to be a total ratings powerhouse by leaning in strong to like a all anti-Trump progressive thing. That doesn't mean you're sending out disinformation. That's what Fox does in a lot of its stuff. I'm saying it's play to the base. Don't placate them. Don't have somebody come on from the other side, like, or play video of Sarah, you know, could be saying like, no, you guys are all wrong. Well, stop trying to be objective like CNN does, because CNN ends up looking like a fool. Nobody on the right is watching CNN, only people on the left, and they're doing a disservice by letting people come in with talking points from the right and just blather on and get into arguments. It doesn't solve anything. That's just TV news. I'm saying if you were to go to the right and you hit home and you cover constantly the Trump and the and all this progressive causes, then you're going to really fuel your audience. I never said, you know, lie or be exactly like Fox News. I'm saying be like them in the sense that you are partisan and you are, you know, you're supporting that side. That's just from the TV news end of it. I would suggest people get their news on print. So because it's and the other thing too is that the left often thinks that the right is just a bunch of idiots, and I'm sure some of that's true, but it's true on the left too. People can be led around by the nose in sound bites as much as they want. People whose passion for things can get in the way of when people on the left do bad things or screw things up. I think that you have to be accountable for that. And so, you know, progressives and liberals are not free from mistakes or, you know, blind political advantage. So I make the point of like this TV news is not like two people who disagree on Republicans and Democrats. And I use this point because if you're a Republican, you're sitting at the table and you're reading the Wall Street Journal, and you're a Democrat and you're sitting at the table and you're reading the New York Times. You're an educated person. You're reading a really long, detailed story about the finer prints of foreign policy or trade or social issues, and you have a difference of opinion. But you've put the time and effort into these things, whether you like the Washington Post or New York Times at all. They're actually good at what they do. They're not sound bites. They do deep diving. And that's not who the TV news audience is. And so that's the point I was trying to make on that. And I still stand by it. I can't believe somebody hasn't done it. And 202 consecutive defeats should be proof enough.
The fact is that Fox News, although they do have a news operation, and the news operation is much more down the line, mm-hmm. the famous Shepard Smith, for example, is a good example of an actual yep. news anchor. Mm-hmm. But the opinion content, mm-hmm. their morning show, which is Donald Trump's favorite TV show, yep. and all their evening content, yep. and this goes back to the days of Bill O'Reilly, but it continues today. That's what they're known for. That is how they're setting the agenda. Mm-hmm. And MSNBC has definitely tried some of that. I wonder, because as I was reading your column, I was thinking about this. I wonder if the real issue here is that Fox News was created out of whole cloth, out of an organization that did not have an existing news department. Like, there was no Fox Network News. That never right. existed. They created mm-hmm. the Fox News Channel. NBC News is an existing bureaucracy and also comes from, you know, this is the Huntley-Brinkley legacy yeah. News organization. And I think the reason that MSNBC, despite moves in that direction, the fact that they give Rachel Maddow an hour every evening, mm-hmm. like she is coming unabashedly from a liberal perspective, telling her little stories. Mm-hmm. She's so smart and she's so fascinating. And sometimes I find her maddening because she will spend 15 minutes just monologuing. And when she gets to the end, she turns out it was just an intro for the guest in the next segment. And I'll be like, what just happened? You filled a lot of time. But my point is, I wonder if one of the reasons MSNBC has, despite some attempts, kind of failed to cross over all the way is because they are coupled with a traditional journalism organization. And, you know, Fox News, the news people who are there, every single one of them from the very beginning knew what they were getting into because they knew that it was going to be a conservative slant all the way. And even though their news is going to have a different set of standards than their opinion content, they were still working for something that is very common in some other countries, which is a news organization that has a point of view, a specific political point of view. And NBC, I would imagine, NBC News is resistant because if MSNBC became the Fox News of the left, then that would have impact on the NBC network news. And, you know, the other people in the network organization who are doing news that isn't necessarily doesn't think of themselves as an MSNBC correspondent, the Today Show and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So I don't know. That's just what struck me, is that I think part of what's working against this sort of thing happening at MSNBC, at CNN, is just a journalism culture. And Fox News did not come out of a journalism culture. Fox News, we report, you decide. And I know what I'm talking about here because my dad was a extremely mm-hmm. conservative person, and he got the rather biased newsletter, which was all about how the liberals had taken over the news media, and Dan Rather was the ringleader of it all, mm-hmm. and that there was no conservative voice. So when Fox News came out, I was like, oh, I see what they're doing here. I know what they're doing here, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it was in the inception of it. And so what that makes me think is the problem here is I'm not sure we live in a world where somebody could do what Fox did, which was just create this whole thing out of whole cloth. You kind of need an existing structure, and those structures are full of people who are going to resist being that.
Well, I also think, I mean, I think that it can be done. I think it's just there's just overthinking on the part of MSNBC and people who have, as you say, ties to quote unquote journalism standards of the past. Those days are over. The fine print point of this whole thing is I'm not advocating throwing that out. I'm just saying, like, if you have somebody who doesn't want to, if you have a reporter who says, okay, you guys are so clearly on the left that I feel like if I do something about a fire or something about covering a bill, it's going to look like I'm slanting it. I would just say we'll put that on the NBC Nightly News. And you really have to, they're overthinking the animals that they're creating. And right now they have kind of had that hybrid thing where you have Maddow and a couple of other people who are doing these clearly politically slanted news segments trying to mimic Fox just from the left perspective. They just need more of it. And, you know, they just, you, the idea, and this is, I think this is weirdly upsetting to people on the left, and it's weirdly upsetting to people who are journalists who keep saying, no, the media is not biased. This is what's stopping them from doing something that could be construed as bias. The world has changed, and those people have not changed around them. Like, if your point of being a journalist on the television, this is why I say the print people are not going to change. The New York Times, whatever you think of it, and the Wall Street Journal, whatever you think of that, they are going about their business in a way that starts from a belief, aside from the editorial pages, that they are doing something objective. So that's not going to change. And there's other print magazines and newspapers that follow that same edict. As far as television, the soundbite generation, the ship has sailed.
Yeah.
So it's sailed. And this is the exact default part of why it's not working. And for people on the left and people who are coming from quote unquote traditional journalism. If the point is getting someone to come to, and I have a sentence in this piece. If the point is to have someone from quote unquote the right, Republican, whatever you want to say, come to CNN and say, oh, yeah, okay, I see what you're doing over here. You know, you know what? Just 1 hour of watching this, you've convinced me that I should really think about that. That's not the world we live in.
It's never going to happen. And it's the wrong medium for it. That, I think that is the code that, and it goes back to not thinking of it as news, that happened at the beginning with Roger Ailes, with Rupert Murdoch, with Fox mm-hmm. News, which is, first off, TV news is bad news. TV news is bad at what it does. And I'm sorry to anybody out there listening who's in TV news, but like I went to journalism school thinking I was going to get in TV news. And I did some TV stuff in journalism school. And what I realized is it is simplified and facile. Instead of talking to somebody who knows what they're talking about, you settle for somebody you can get on camera. Mm-hmm. It is not meaningful in almost any way, with some very specific exceptions. There are people who do good work in TV news. It tends to be longer form or on breaking news, like election night. It's a great time to watch TV news.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Although CNN really botched election night too, by the way. Their maps were great, but their panel was literally just like Republican hack, Democrat hack, Republican hack, Democrat hack. It was totally
so outdated.
So, and then they had Nate, MSNBC, no, ABC News had Nate Silver on a desk somewhere. And I'm like, why is everybody not doing something like that? Mm-hmm. What? Talk to the analysts, not the hacks. But my point is, like, TV news is bad anyway. And Fox News knew that. And they're like, no. This is entertainment. And it's entertainment speaking and reinforcing a worldview and making people angry and outraged and laugh at the, you know, and patriotic and excited about people who are in power and dislike these other people. Let's make it like sports. You've got a rooting interest and we're going to do it like that. And TV's great at that, right? TV's great at that in a way that TV journalism is bad at what it does. So they leaned into it and they did it. And that's just, that's effective. I will also say, I think it's only effective for people over the age of about 40. Mm-hmm. Or 45.
Right.
I think that the influence of Fox News is going to wane in our society. Now, it may be replaced by a whole bunch of horrible websites that do the right. same thing, but Fox News is viewed by elderly people, and TV yeah. news in general is viewed by elderly people, because most people below our ages never really got into TV news, and it's not relevant for them. And in fact, some of them are reading what used to be newspapers on their iPads, and other people are watching YouTube videos, but I don't think the power of Fox News as a thing is going to remain in the long term, unless they become something very different than what they are. And I know they've got a streaming service, but that seems like it's playing to the base and not to a new generation.
Yeah, it's and like you said, this is not going to be fixed until, certainly on the left, that they realize that they're trying to do something for an audience that does not exist. That no one wants to, on TV news on the right, wants to hear what you're saying. So no one tuned into CNN on the hardcore right, or even, you know, strongly Republican, tuned into CNN to see what they said. But CNN allowed basically the people who spread that message to come on to their election coverage and water it down. This is where, if you have, like you said, go with the analysts, go with the numbers people, the data people, and then go with people who are progressive and who are on your side, so to speak. Tell those stories, you know, do more of those stories about your people, your candidates, your nominees, stir up support for that. If you think that it's not biased, you are living in crazy, crazy, crazy times. So it's broken, and it won't get fixed until the left and people who are still thinking that TV has some journalism left in it get over that fallacy.
Yeah, well, we'll see if something changes there, but it hasn't changed in whatever 17 years that Fox News has been on top.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to believe that it will change. But I do think you're right that I'm going to say it. I think it's propaganda, and what you're asking for is propaganda on the other side.
Yes, absolutely.
But mm-hmm. Or at least from a business analysis standpoint, it's not like, gee, everybody, we need more propaganda. But like, there is an opportunity for propaganda. Fox News has shown it. I will say this: it's more entertaining. Like, whichever side, it's way more entertaining when it has a point of view. I think the biggest fault of CNN today is that it's boring, and it's because it does the both sidesism, which makes nobody happy, by the way, because
right.
on my Twitter feed and on my Facebook pages from my family, like, I get it from the left and from the right, and nobody's happy with it if you're down the middle, because
yeah.
if you're down the middle and you say, well, the president said this and there's no evidence of that, half of them are like, fake news, it's totally true, and the other half are like, why didn't you call him a liar?
Yeah,
it's like, okay,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. So they can't win, and it's not that interesting, because like I said, you end up with hack from the left, hack from the right, both sides going through the motions, and it's TV news, so it's not that in-depth anyway in most cases. So it's like, why is this even here? At least if you've got a point of view at this point, even if it's propaganda, even if it's just for entertainment purposes only, at least it's better television in the sense that it's more entertaining. I don't know if it's better for the world. I think we'd all be better off with less propaganda in our lives, but that's a pipe dream. There's always going to be political propaganda, and we just have to be better at understanding what we're looking at. And if you want to, you know, turn on Fox Sports Bay Area and watch that show that says the Warriors are great, then do that, because you're a Warriors fan, and that's mm-hmm. It's the same thing.
Yeah, and I say in the piece, like, tap into the anger. The left has tons of anger. I have tons of anger. I do. I wouldn't want that as my sole source of news, but other
sure.
people would, and I'm not going to judge them. They're just, that's the TLDR generation.
I'll throw in some of the talk shows and comedy shows here. I was going to say, who has really made it as the voice of sort of truth and the opposition to Donald Trump? And it's like, you know, it's talk shows, and this was true of previous politicians too. Like, there are Comedy Central shows and late night talk shows and HBO shows and all sorts of other shows that speak to it. What's interesting is that they're all kind of in this layer of comedy and satire, And but it does say something that like Jon Stewart is the most relevant, perhaps, commentator from the left skewering Republican politicians in the last 15 years.
Yeah, and John Oliver and Samantha Bee.
And today we've got, exactly. Mm-hmm. We've got Trevor Noah and John Oliver and Samantha Bee and Stephen Colbert and Seth Meyers doing that. But isn't that telling that those aren't news people? Like, the news people aren't doing it, but the entertainment people are doing it because they get that it's entertaining.
Right. And look at this. This is a perfect example of how to make this work. And this is pointed out by a number of people. Think about it. Like, just the other day, Colbert had this landmark defeat of Fallon, and he's this is a guy who was on the verge of being canceled by CBS, which is already, it's like a right leaning, you know, network in the prime time at night, all the rules are off. Instead of sort of like towing the line or being kind of middle of the road, which is what he was doing because he was trying to fit in CBS, he was about to be canceled. And what turned it around is he said, all right, screw it. I'm going to be myself, and I'm going to take on Trump, and I'm going to tear him a new one like every night. And now he's number one. So let that be a lesson to people on the news side who are getting their ass handed to them constantly by Fox News. And Fox News, it's not even the point that I'm making, it's not even close. And it's just like, it's like they're twice as much as them combined. It's like CNN and MSNBC combined still lose to Fox News. It's not even close.
Yep.
The system's broken. It's frustrating to talk about because we get these antiquated ideas that we just discussed in detail about like journalism. And, you know, in fact, somebody tweeted today that it would never work because the left doesn't want to be lied to. I'm like, dude, you are oblivious. you are oblivious to human nature. So, you know, maybe it won't work because there's too many people who have that attitude that they can't possibly be wrong because they're on the progressive side.
Everybody likes to be told things they want to hear.
Yep.
It's not necessarily good for you, but everybody likes it. All right. We could go on and on about that and get that to our podcast, but instead, how about we do some letters?
Let's do that.
All right. So this one comes from Majeski on Twitter. I hope I pronounced that right. I don't know. It's Majeski. Majeski. It says, hey, TVTM, an alternative to doing a spreadsheet, I was talking last week about spreadsheets to manage my TV viewing, is the TV Time app, which you have talked about. You can add shows to your queue and always have a long list of episodes available. However, it usually only shows original network shows, not the streaming service it's on now. So I actually set up TV Time this week after our conversation last week. And mm-hmm. it takes some time because you have to remember all the shows that you're interested in watching. Whereas now that it's set up, if you mention a show, I can just add it pretty quickly. And I had to mark, like, yes, I've seen these seasons of this show and these episodes. But it's got a couple nice things. First off, it's got an upcoming tab where it actually says, like, Mrs. Maisel's back in 19 days. The good Place's next episode is in 20 days. Counterpart debuts in 23 days. Right, like it's got when the shows are coming.
Nice. Yeah, uh-huh.
And then it's a watch next. It's got episodes that have aired of shows that I'm watching. Whatever the next episode is, if it's available. And also that's for streaming or for airing. So like right now it's got the episode of season 2 of Patriot that I'm on is in this list, as well as like the episodes of Atlanta that I haven't watched yet, and the episodes of Daredevil season 3 that I haven't watched yet. And it's not perfect, but and I would say actually streaming is one of the challenges. Like I wanted to put People of Earth in there. Mm-hmm. Because you have suggested that, and one of the challenges, I can't say like only show the stuff that I've got access to, and so it'll put it in there, and then it stares at me, but I have to buy that season on iTunes is the only way for me to buy it, and I'd rather wait for it to show up on one of my streaming services.
Right.
So there's eventually some issues there, but I will say, if you want to do the work, which there is some work, and my wife was sort of looking at me like, what are you doing? Are you doing like... clerical work involving television watching. And I said, yes, I am. But the next night, I was like, so we got Daredevil or Patriot, or we could go back to Smilf or Mozart in the Jungle. We got a few of those left. We could start, and she was like, oh, okay. Yeah, let's watch that. So maybe I will stick with this time, TV time. So it's worth checking out if you want a little app to help you plan your viewing in these times of confusion. Maybe it is a good idea.
Nice.
No spreadsheet required.
I like it.
All right. Here, this one's from Rich in the +44. The subject is sad product placement. Spotted a little product placement in Patriot Season 2, Episode 1. The French detectives are talking about items of clothing and where they'd be categorized on Zappos. Problem is, Zappos isn't a thing at all over here in Europe. But it is owned by Amazon. Rich from the +44.
That's awesome. Yep, I did that. I noticed that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's Amazon product placement. What you going to do?
You know, and I'll take it. I don't care. As long as I get more episodes of Patriot, it's the best.
All right, this one is from Keith, who writes, "While I've definitely gotten the impression that Netflix's show Maniac has just sunk like a forgotten stone through the cultural zeitgeist without leaving so much as a ripple, there is one thing about the show that I do not remember anyone mentioning. Maniac is one of the best distillations of Philip K. Dick's aesthetic that I have ever seen. Actual movie and TV adaptations of PKD's work just don't seem to get it, and that includes Amazon's Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams. Maniac gets it. The show understands what makes a PKD story a PKD story. The show starts in the real world, except not really. Details are off and nobody notices. Companies like AdBuddy and DocStop are things I would expect to see in a PKD story. They're not even the only companies that provide those services, which is also very PKD. The isolation booth, or whatever it's called, is straight out of PKD. Drugs, mental illness, and deranged computers altering reality are all PKD. In fact, Maniac reminds me nothing so much as Eye in the Sky, which happens to be one of my favorite PKD books. Even the fact that mental illness starts out being really important, but kind of sort of gets forgotten as the story progresses, is right out of his playbook. So on the one hand, I love the fact that Maniac gets it in a way that no other show is managed. On the other hand, I wish Maniac had been a better show. It's okay. I hunted down the original Norwegian show, which is also available on Netflix. I've only had time to watch the first couple episodes, but that show is so much freaking better than the remake. I really need to finish it. I forgot to ask a question. Sorry. All right. From the 415, which is some kind of area of record. Longtime listener, first episode, blah, 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 question boy and nubs. Love to Putin's drunk mother and the existential French woman, and I'm guessing Bars is still stuck so deep in development hell that we'll never hear mention of again. Again, I think Bars will be on our streaming service when we launch it. That's an OG
solid
letter writer, listener Keith.
So
there's a lot of references
OG
there. Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Deep dive.
That's pretty good, though. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. So some thoughts about Maniac, which you liked. And I don't know, everything sinks like a stone through the public consciousness at this point. I'm not sure that's just that one. It's all of
them. Well, it's also built into the DNA of Netflix that it comes out and then it goes away because it's got one day to do it.
Right.
You know, I liked it. I bet my review was that it didn't. It ultimately ended up not being, and I revisited it in a critic's notebook. It ultimately didn't satisfy because it was it was much more about a flashy direction than it was about story.
Maybe that Norwegian version is
that's another
bananas
one to add to the list.
And actually, having it be described as the kind of ultimate Philip K. Dick kind of story makes it like I'm kind of intrigued by that. And I think people who might have not tried it out might hear that and say, "Oh, that's an interesting way to approach it. Maybe I will check it out." Oh, by the way, he mentioned existential French woman, a character from the original TVTM. We got a couple of notes after our discussion of The Revenants on Netflix and talking about kind of existential zombie issues that we didn't mention existential French zombie or something to that. If one has never lived, can one ever truly become the undead? Something like that, but we didn't do it. So there it is. Existential French woman, one of my neighbors.
She lives, one of your neighbors, yes.
In Marin County. I may not actually know who she is. All right. Donnie from the 206 wrote in to say, "Let's talk about Amazon's Homecoming. Mm-hmm. I love the show, and I think Sam Esmail is a genius, but for me, the best thing about this series is a running time that barely hits 30 minutes per episode. In a world where even a frothy teen show like Chilling Adventures of Sabrina has a 61-minute pilot, it is incredibly refreshing to watch a drama that isn't afraid to have 25-minute episodes. It's also the first thing I mention when recommending the show to friends, who often feel overwhelmed with the huge glut of streaming dramas vying for their attention. My question, why don't we see more half-hour dramas, and are there any current dramas that would be better if they were shorter? Surely Westworld and the Marvel Netflix shows could stand to be pared down to 30 minutes. Love to your mothers, Donnie and the 206.
I can support half of that, probably. 30 okay. minutes of that.
okay. My feedback will be, I want to know what you think about this idea, but I will say there are times in the evening when it's getting late in the evening and I'm sitting there thinking, do I really want to watch another show?
Absolutely.
And I'll think to myself, oh, it's an hour. I can't. I'm not going to watch another hour. Whereas mm-hmm. if something's a half an hour, I'm like, oh, sure. Yeah, half an hour, I'll do that. So I feel like there is a place, like, it doesn't necessarily mean that all shows should be half an hour long, but there is, you know, it does get grinding if everything that you're watching is an hour runtime.
Yeah, I think that the runtime on Homecoming is excellent. And the two shows that I've touted as, like, unbelievable achievements in their respective places is The End of the Fucking World, check the box.
Yep.
That on is amazing. You know, I think the average runtime is 18 and a half minutes for that. It's masterful for what they accomplished in there. And then Mr. In Between,
right. That's mm-hmm. a short one too.
Yeah, there's not an episode that exceeds 26 minutes of the six that are on there. So the part of the idea that I don't believe is, I don't think everything should be half an hour. I think, you know, I think there's plenty of good hour long shows. And as I've said many times, because I think there's an epidemic of critics talking about runtime as meaning it's bad. I just say it's a per case basis. Like I said it a bunch of times. If you give me an hour and 10 minutes of great stuff, I'll watch an hour and 10 minutes. I'll watch an hour and 20 minutes if it's great. It's the yeah. problem is the people have is when you give us 110 minutes and, you know, 42 of them are good. So that's the problem.
Right. Right. Well, I think I actually am really optimistic about this because I think now that we are in a streaming world, that shows made for streaming have no time constraints. And I think the first thing that everybody thought was, oh, good. I'm tired of cutting my show to 42 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let it breathe. And then I think we're now in an era where people are saying, wait a second, I can tell this story in 24 minutes or 31 minutes, mm-hmm. and that's fine too.
Yeah.
And that's the next, so with these shows that you've mentioned, like, it's the other way, which is like, what if they were smaller chunks? What, you know, and maybe there are more episodes even, but there are smaller chunks to fit the story, because on streaming you have no time slot. It really doesn't matter. Yeah. And I feel like maybe that's where we're getting now, is that creators are coming around to that. I was listening to the Good Place podcast, and I am continually impressed with the fact that although they have a ridiculous constraint on NBC, which is like 21 and a half or 22 and a half minutes that they have to fit into, I laughed when I discovered that their extended runtime versions that they do on streaming tend to be about 23 minutes or 24 minutes. They don't do a 35 minute long version of that right, show. Right. They'll put in an extra 40 seconds. And mm-hmm. I thought that is discipline. I really like that. But I do think in the long run, we're already starting to see it. People will be like, well, wait a second. Why do I do, like, Game of Thrones? I'm looking forward to that last season, which is coming, they announced, coming out in April. Because yeah. it's mm-hmm. that's going to be like six movies, basically. And they're going to be epic episodes that are long and involved. And that's great. That's great. What that fits that show. I think that show struggled with momentum sometimes, where you just as things are picking up, it's the end of the episode. But something like this, I think, is great too. The idea that you can take a bite-sized thing and if you want to watch two, watch two.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's where it's headed. I actually have, this is not like, well, I don't know what to call it. You know, cause for breaking news or anything, but I'm going to start a series. It's, you know, the Hidden Gems thing has turned out to be really welcome for people. I get such great feedback off of that. I don't do enough of them, obviously. But, you know, the power rankings have become, they've always been popular, but now that I do them less frequently and they just come back in chunks, it allows people to say, oh, right, here's of these 24 shows, I've seen eight, so I'll just put these on my list to do. But I'm going to start this thing that's based on time. It's actually going to be called TV Time, weirdly enough.
Ooh.
And it's the first one should be next week. And I'm going to start off with, you know, it's not all encompassing at the beginning, because I'm going to start off with a handful of really good series that are short, that are, they're six episodes or less. And so, like, if you want to commit it to a series and you want to see it all the way through, but that's the cutoff, six episodes. I'm gonna put a bunch of stuff in there for you, for people to watch. And, you know, there'll be another version of TV time later that says, here's another batch of series that are six episodes or less. But after I do the first six, the next one will be for like 6 to 10 episodes. And then after, then the one after that will be like, okay, so you have a little bit of time at the beginning. You have a moderate amount of time in the middle. And then you have all the time in the world. I would love to be that person. So maybe you can now take on, you know, Halt and Catch Fire or Rectify or all the seasons of The Wire. So I'm going to have, you know, just go back and base it on how much time do you have? Oh, this much? Then here's a bunch of shows. So that feature is going to start next week.
Cool. Sounds good. Yeah, it is. When you think about like time commitment, that is a fascinating way to view it, right? Which is like The Americans is great, but it is a whatever it is, 80-hour time commitment.
Yeah, you got to.
And then here's this, and it's a 6-hour time commitment. Well, let's take that on.
Right, right. And I think that you know, a little special merit badge goes to shows that have a, you know, have a that will have a second season, but. If you just wanted to watch the first six episodes or whatever it is, then it's fine. You can just watch that and then be done with it. And you got what everybody was thinking about. And now you can move on. It's like, American Vandal. You don't have to watch American Vandal 2. You can just watch American Vandal 1 and
completely
be totally
stands alone. Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good point too, where you're not renewing. You can renew your commitment or not at the end and you're not going to feel left out. Whereas in something like The Americans, if you watch one season, it's like, come on, you really need to watch the whole thing.
Yeah. You pretty much got to go all the way.
Right. All right, cool. We have one more letter, and this is from John in the 925, who says, hi, Tim and Jason. This is going to get me excluded from the cool kids table at the upcoming TVTM meetup. It is still upcoming. It'll happen someday. I think we're going to pick, by the way, I think we're just going to pick a bar somewhere and say we're going to be here on such a day, and it's not going to be like invitations, and it's not going to be we're renting a room. It's literally we're going to say, hey, everybody in the Bay Area or Northern California, we're going to be at this place and come say hi. Because I did that in Brooklyn not too long ago, and it totally worked. So I think we're going to do that. So stay tuned.
That's awesome.
We'll pick a bar somewhere for that we'll read the bar's unaired pilot script. which doesn't exist. I'm disappointed Netflix dropped The Good Cop. Sure, it's mindless fluff, but there's something to be said for standalone mysteries that get resolved in an hour. Better that than Netflix bloat. No worries, though. I've still got two more seasons of The Republic of Doyle from Canada to look forward to. The next year, the reboot of Veronica Mars on Hulu. On the other end of the Goodman-approved spectrum, I'm also enjoying, if that's the right word, Broadchurch. However, as great as it is so far, they better not drag the mystery out beyond the 10-episode story arc of season one or they'll lose me. They won't. They won't. Every season of Broadchurch, and there are three of them, each sadder than the last, is standalone. They link, but they're not going to rip you off. Life's too short. I haven't even started watching the fabulous Jodie Whittaker and Doctor Who yet, or David Tennant's new show. P.S. If there's such a thing, David Simon on Twitter is must-read entertainment. It turns out the best character he ever created is himself. John in the 925.
Very well done.
That's very good. Very good.
Very well done.
I mean, The Good Cop is, I mean, I think the answer is clear. The Blue Skies standalone classic TV model at Netflix is not going to work.
Yeah.
They've just decided. Because that was a quick hook, too. They're like, nope.
That was a quick hook. That was like, clearly people were not watching, or it just was not retention or something. It was just, whatever their algorithm is, it detected the flop.
I mean, it's a bunch of standalone episodes. You're not really motivated to binge it, right? I mean, and they may care about that. They may look at that and be like, no, this is not the business that we're in. And that's it's interesting, but I understand why people who like it are disappointed. But boy, that was a clear signal from Netflix that was like, nope, that experiment, nope, gone, done.
Yes. Please leave every episode with a cliffhanger.
I read an interesting piece. I think it actually was on Hollywood Reporter about the Hasan Minhaj show on Netflix, Patriot Act, which I've seen a couple episodes of, and I think is very good. Mm-hmm. And they keep calling it a talk show, which is hilarious because it is not a talk show. It is a talk show in the same way that Last Week Tonight with John Oliver is a talk show, or where it's literally a man who stands there and talks for half an hour. I guess that's a talk show, but he doesn't talk to anyone. There are no guests. And the difference between John Oliver's show and Hasan Minhaj's show is that John Oliver has a desk that he sits behind, and Hasan Minhaj stands in front of a screen like it's a TED Talk. And otherwise, it's exactly the same. But anyway, the piece was how Hasan Minhaj and his people are struggling with this idea of doing a Netflix show, because there's the, you want to be commenting on current events, but it's mm-hmm. also Netflix, so you want to be in the catalog and have it be viewable. And I think they've walked the line. You know, they're all subject driven. It reminds me a little bit of the documentary series that Vox Media is doing on Netflix, where it's these little 23-minute, 18-minute long documentaries about subjects, and they're super bingeable, or you can kind of pick and choose your subject matter. And I think that Hasan Minhaj is doing that too, and I think it will serve him well. But it shows you, like, the calculus of what kind of show you make on Netflix is different because it's Netflix.
Absolutely. And like, they're pulling the plug on the series that the quote unquote late night series that they
the Michelle Wolf one mm-hmm. and all of those shows that they canceled.
They've
and
all pulled them
and
out.
Even the Joel McHale.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
So it's just they're not working. So it doesn't work. I don't think Sarah's what's her name's show on Hulu is that great. I mean, either, because it just she does good work on it. I don't think it's they're trying to figure out how to make it relevant as well. They're dropping it at different times. But if the Netflix one were, it's just I don't think that streaming services quite have captured like how to keep something on the shelf as content you would pay for. But I don't know. It's I'm happy that I'm not tasked with figuring out that mystery.
That's a piece by Hillary Lewis at THR. I will put it in our show notes if you want to read it. But I think it's it's just kind of fun to think about, like, how and Good Cop is a good example, where it's like, could the Good Cop have been successful somewhere else? Maybe, but not on Netflix. And this is
CBS, maybe.
As Netflix is canceling shows now because we've entered that era finally. Mm-hmm. And since they don't release any numbers, we now have some piece of evidence to get a sense of what works on Netflix and what doesn't, which is what shows get canceled. And that is data of a sort. That's the best we're going to get from Netflix. And The Good Cop getting canceled almost immediately is a sign.
It is.
It's going out of business. That's a Ghostbusters reference. Anyway, if you would like to send a letter to us to be read perhaps in 2 weeks, because we'll take Thanksgiving week off. We're going to go stuff ourselves full of turkey. But then we'll be back digesting the turkey in 2 weeks. Email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com or tweet at us @TVTM. Those are the two best ways to reach us. And until 2 weeks from now, Tim, just put on your mask, your Bane mask, and your
rebreather,
and cover your skin and stay out of the smoke as much as you can.
I will do that. And bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.